Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everybody today to On Point with your hosts. I'm Don Allen and Mr. Ron Edwards. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how you doing today, this stormy day?
Fine, Don. You know, we've been opening the program for the last number of months with decent weather and et cetera. In fact, in the summer, not even any thunderstorms or, you know, the clap of thunder or lightning, et cetera. But I tell you, folks got caught off guard last night and this morning. I guess we must have 6 or 7 inches, if you will, wet, heavy, sloshy stuff. Really, as they say, it's real crappy out there. And not pleasant, but they're lucky that the temperature is staying as high as it is here in the Twin Cities this afternoon. But a lot of areas are losing power and have lost power. I guess there's supposed to be about 70,000 people out of service in the so-called northern suburbs, which is interesting. Seems like it always happens. Guess the power lines can't take the weight of the wet snow. But anyways, winter, old man winter is here, buddy, in Minnesota. Tough going on the traffic. But what else you got, Don? What else is happening, man? Well, by the way, how did that Gopher game turn out? Anybody know?
No, I have not checked on that yet, but I will momentarily here while I look in the other studio here on the other laptop and see how the game is going. Minnesota Gophers. Let's see what they're doing here. That might take me a minute here.
Oh, that's okay. By the way, we got Brett Favre and the Vikings, who stumbled around and won one last week against the Arizona Cardinals in Chicago tomorrow.
Oh,
against a very tough Chicago Bear defense.
Okay. That should be a pretty interesting game. You think they're going to make that crucial point and win that game?
It all depends on how poorly Jay Cutler, the quarterback for the Chicago Bears, plays. He's a mystery, to say the least. Two up and down, if you will. He's really created problems for Lovie Smith, the African-American coach there with the Bears. In fact, he kind of keeps Lovie on the hot seat, and that's really unfortunate because at one point, Chicago had a pretty decent contingent of players, but I think there's problems there, just like there's problems in Minnesota. Chicago Sun-Times reporting about 3 days ago, at least 6 or 7 Viking players indicating their disdain and mistrust of Coach Brad Childress. My sense is if Brad doesn't get back to the finals of the NFC, he probably won't be here next year. Wolfie will have to eat that extension that he gave me. He gave him a couple years extension. The Viking ownership may have to eat that if this team does not make the playoffs. And they're going to have to go a ways because I don't think Brett Favre will be back next year. And they basically let Tavares Jackson, the black quarterback, second string black quarterback here, know that they don't respect him and et cetera. But there's dissension. Pat Williams, the veteran, 16-year veteran, nose tackle, came on with some peculiar statements, as far as I'm concerned, about we all love and respect Brad Childress, and we told him we had his back, and et cetera. Obviously, 6 anonymous Viking players said just the opposite. That, Don, in the world of sport, represents dissension in the clubhouse, in the locker room, if you will. And some of that is probably going to be in play tomorrow in Chicago. I don't know what the elements, I think the weather forecast calls for basically, you know, decent November weather in Chicago, but Vikings don't play outside well in the elements. So keep your eye on that situation. Vikings could go either 4 or 5 or 3 and 6. If they go 3 and 6, it's basically all over for them. And we will hear a lot of recriminations and allegations and et cetera. But, hey, sometimes can't happen to the finest franchise.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, you know, isn't Brett Favre's ankle, like, have a hairline fracture in it? Isn't he somehow damaged? And my point is,
he's got 2 fractures, in fact.
Yeah,
2 fractures, which is interesting, which means they're putting a lot of Novocaine and et cetera in that ankle. You know, that's the ankle he just had surgically repaired over the summer. So And when you talk in terms of arthritic conditions that automatically are setting in when you have that kind of injury, you know, this is pretty much it.
Okay, well, Mr. Edwards, just moving on and breaking news, you know, last night it was reported by the Star Tribune, or I should say right after 12 p.m. Today, it was reported that a man jumped to his death while running from police in downtown Minneapolis a little bit after 2 a.m. He was at the nightclub Epic, which is right there along the light rail route in downtown Minneapolis, and said he jumped over a fence and fell several stories to his death. I know here at On Point, we have received many telephone calls and about this, and some people that were actually down there who wished to remain anonymous, but says, you know, this gentleman was running for his life.
From the police?
From the police, yes. Yeah. And one of the callers reminded me of in the 1990s when they said the gentleman jumped from a roof of the duplex on 11th and Irving. And it was too bad because right next door, the head U.S. attorney's secretary lived there and saw the police throw him off the roof.
That would have been Miss Johnson, who was the administrative assistant to the U.S. Attorney's Office back in the 90s. Oh, that's interesting that someone called and remembered that. Police threw him off the roof. We had another roof incident about 10 years later. I was present downtown 2007. We were at Pizza Lucci's. I was part of my role as a PCRC member and monitoring the activities of police. I was present when a Caucasian allegedly jumped off, and I'm pretty sure it's that same exact area. That's quite a fall. He was blessed to have fallen in such a way that all he did is broke both his legs and his pelvis. But I'm pretty sure I know exactly the route that the deceased took, and that's quite a drop, and basically it's all concrete.
Yes. Not, it's just that, yeah, I posted on my Facebook page and a lot of people got back with me and you had a few telephone calls and people that were actually down there at an unrelated nightclub that, you know, saw this guy just running the way he was running. And I'm just thinking, you know, what would happen if they would have caught up with it, you know, or if they did catch up with him. You know, currently we have a request in the MnDOT to review the On Point here, and the National Research has a request in the MnDOT to review those cameras, if possible, from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. to see if we can see anything on there. But we probably won't get word on that till late Monday, but we will keep our informed.
And by the way, those cameras were activated last night. Those cameras are very crucial to MnDOT's camera security grid, if you will. And those cameras focus right on folks coming out of downtown. It allows MnDOT to keep an eye on potential DWIs, particularly real erratic drivers that may be shooting out of there. I've seen them come out of downtown along that particular route, moving towards Glenwood. I mean, 60, 70 miles an hour. Posted speed there, by the way, is only 40. And so I bet you the request that we all jointly made earlier this afternoon that the camera has captured certainly the individual, the African American, falling quote unquote to his death there. I guess I don't want to sound too dry, Mr. Allen, but I've seen so much of this happening in this city with respect to this police department and how it's done. I mean, I got to tell you, I got to repeat again. It was amazing that someone called you and they had remembered the situation that took place in which a Department of Justice official, a member of the staff of the U.S. Attorney's Office and for the Federal District of Minnesota at that time, she and her husband were in their apartment and witnessed that incident. And boy, there was quite a cover up. But her name is Miss Johnson. She no longer lives here in Minnesota. She retired from the U.S. Attorney's Office. Now lives in a southern state, if you will. And so, you know, she's probably blessed in that respect. But I'll repeat it again. That's interesting. Someone remembered that particular incident.
Yeah, this is, it kind of jogged my memory because I went back through some archives and looking some stuff, and I just was very interested in that and to find out the details on what happened in that particular case. And so probably this time next Saturday, next on point, and on our blogs, you know, that we have, we'll probably have some more information up. Speaking of the Minneapolis Police Department, we're going to have to stay on this topic here for a minute because it seems like, you know, there's flukes, there's wobbles, and there's trends. And it seems like, Mr. Edwards, we have a trend between Quincy Smith, Dominique Felder, David Cornelius Smith, and now 15-year-old Courtney Williams, who back in 2004, if I'm not mistaken, was shot and killed by the Minneapolis police. And
absolutely correct. Again, for our domestic and international audiences, that story is on the front page. This morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune above the fold. It was in 2004, the fall of 2004, that the 15-year-old young African-American was executed. Actually, he was executed. The police maintained, the story indicates that. We have additional information because we were involved in the examination and the request of then-Chief McManus for a change in the investigative procedure of the police department because there were witnesses to the actual shooting and slash execution of young Mr. Williams. He actually was shot twice, shot in the back, which David Chenin tried to say in this morning's edition of the paper that that did not happen. It did happen. Yeah. And then he was shot point blank in the middle of his forehead, execution style, while on his knees with his hands raised. Now, the story says that they pellet gun was found about 15 feet away. That's untrue also. The pellet gun was found about 40 feet away, and actually, as the attorney, Miss Jill Clark, indicated, again in the copyrighted story this morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, was actually on the other side of a fence. We, as a member of the Department of Justice's police community relations team, also press that issue as a point of reference. We would call attention to the minutes of the PCRC back in 2004. That was our first year in existence under the five-year agreement. We spent a lot of time with Chief McManus, and we watched that investigation curl up and die, if you will. We watched the cover-up take place. We wrote about it in our own column in Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. We talked about it on our television program, and et cetera. We actually had thought, Mr. Allen, that the family had some way or another let this get by. In fact, we thought the statute of limitations were going to catch them, but it's quite clear. And by the way, just for the record, anybody, you know, wants to do the challenge thing, et cetera, we were approached by the Star Tribune, by David Chenin, 5 weeks ago.
October.
And actually, yeah. Yes, way back in early October, and talked to them about our knowledge and our involvement as a member of the Department of Justice Police Community Relations Team. I was a little surprised that it allegedly took them this long. In fact, I thought at some point or another they had just made a decision not to write about it. By the way, the police officer who executed Mr. Williams that night in the backyard,
there's a little bit of North Minneapolis,
he was fired from his job 2 years ago for some interesting gunplay in an incident on the far south side of Minneapolis.
Okay, and that would be Officer Scott Mars, who the Star Tribune neglected to talk about some jail time that he had for an unrelated incident.
That's absolutely correct. And anybody that are listening with computer capabilities, all they have to do is call up Scotty's name and the Pacific incident, and you will see it. Yeah, for some reason or another, Mr. Chenin and the Star Tribune forgot to mention that.
Yeah, they did forget to mention that, and they also forgot to mention that he was shot, you know, in the back and point blank in the head. So this is another sanitized story by the Star Tribune, and without all the details, again. But this is just seems like, you know, there are no consequences for the city of Minneapolis and its officials. I mean, you have the police shooting and tasing and killing these black and you have the politicians doing the same thing in a different way with economic development. So it's just not a win-win for anybody right now in Minneapolis.
Absolutely correct, sir. Absolutely correct. And if there's any are out there that want to examine us on the situation with young Mr. Williams, feel free to give us a call. You have the number there, Mr.
Yes.
Allen.
Yes. The toll-free number they can call in is 1-877-572-4288. And for those of you in the chat room, we welcome a telephone call at 1-877-572-4288. And if you're in the Twin Cities, you can dial 347-426-3904. And you're listening to On Point with Ronald A. Edwards and Don Allen.
Mr. Allen, let me just pull another piece out there, because we had said earlier in this reflection that there were witnesses to the execution of young Mr. Williams. The person, in fact, there were two, a gentleman and his adult-age daughter were at the back door of their home when Courtney Williams was shot in the head, execution style. That individual and his daughter were never officially interviewed. When we asked six months later, the interviewing, what had happened, that interview disappeared. His name was Samuel Flowers, by the way.
Okay.
Just for folks in this town who don't want to believe the kind of Gestapo mentality and Gestapo operations that are going on. Mr. Samuel Flowers was his name. The man attempted to come forward. The investigators, some kind of way, at some point I made inquiry directly, in fact, in the presence of Chief McManus, and was given a fairy tale by the investigators at that particular time. So, and one of the investigators was black. And also was a friend of Scott Mars, but who wound up getting himself in big trouble when Scott Mars was arrested for gunplay in South Minneapolis, which ultimately led to him being fired and a short period of time in prison, locked up. Oh, there's quite a lot of stories we have up here in Minnesota.
Oh, yes, quite a few. Now, Mr. Edwards, I have to focus with all these situations, from Dominic Felder to Mr. Williams. What role, if any, did the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights take? I mean,
in the case of Mr. Williams, the Civil Rights Department at that time was asked to, because the Civilian Review Authority is an adjunct of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and reports to the Civil Rights Department's director. In 2004, when this tragedy happened, and we had had quite a few, unfortunately, shootings of young African-Americans, et cetera, they were asked to examine this particular case. And, in fact, the mother, who was shown in this morning's edition of the paper, actually attempted to file some kind of complaint with them. They bungled that just as a couple years later they mercifully bungled the Fong Lee case. You and I know, because we asked officially for an investigation in the situation involving Mr. Smith at the YMCA, David Cornelius Smith. The department basically had gained a reputation of interviewing citizens and then passing the information back to the police department, allowing the police department to reconfigure the material facts in the case. In the Fong Lee case, this came out, by the way, during the course of the trial. It was an issue, I know, that Mr. Patton, the attorney for the Fong Lee family, this Fong Lee is not to be confused with Kaw Fong Lee, the gentleman who was imprisoned wrongly for an automobile accident in his Lexus in which his brakes went bad. But in the case of Fong Lee, 19-year-old Asian, gunned down in Minneapolis on 22nd of July 2006, the Civil Rights Department played a very jaundiced role to your specific question, and that is to pass information back to the police. In fact, it's one of the issues now that's quietly emerging. The Star Tribune has agreed with the mayor that they will suppress this. The former head of investigation of the Civil Rights Department, Mr. Ron Brandon, has been fired. And I tell you, it's quite a scandal. And word is that he is threatening to tell everything. But he has been fired from the city. He was, first of all, removed and rotated out of the Civil Rights Department about 2 months ago. He did not realize the job that he was being rotated into in regulatory services had already been eliminated, and then a specific document emerged which said he had been involved in some kind of sexual harassment. And just about 12 days ago, he was, in fact, fired. But there's a danger, and the city knows this, with Mr. Brandon, who served as the chief investigator. That's the position now held by Kip Brown.
Michael Kip Brown.
Yes. But Mr. Brandon is a walking time bomb with respect to the information that he has about the cover-ups. So to your question, sir, that's you know, again, part of the information, and we stand by that information, that this department has historically, the Civil Rights Department has historically served as a information conduit against the interest of citizens for the police department here in Minneapolis.
Oh, no. Yeah, that is not a good thing. Not a good thing. We also have like the third item here, or the fourth item here, with the Minneapolis Police Department. There's a gentleman, Mr. Rosenberg, was we talked about last week for a minute. He was assaulted by Sergeant Palmer, the spokesperson on behalf of the Minneapolis Police Department. And
yes,
we're still waiting for word back on how that's going to taxi out. And I just wanted to keep that in top of mind. You have a series of events going on involving city employees, and which are the Minneapolis Police Department, and also their spokespersons or representatives. I happened to be at the Jordan Area Community Council meeting where Michael Kip Brown, who is the head of the investigation unit for the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, decided that he was going to, step down from being the chair, and but his vice chair, who remained vice chair, is the gentleman who has African American neighbors who said that rats are better than his or black people, because rats know who their mothers and fathers are. So he remained
yes.
the vice chair of the Jordan Area Community Council, and information has been leaked. One of our affiliates, the Jordan Hotman Group, has undeniable proof that there are contacts inside the Minneapolis Police Department leaking information to hate bloggers like Johnny Northside, and also the Urban Inquisition. So we're trying to put a hole in that right now. But it's a lot of corruption going on out there, Mr. Edwards.
And I think people need to understand the name of that last group that you named, the Urban Inquisition, because
yes.
these are Caucasians who are priding themselves of working closely with neo-Nazi factions inside the Minneapolis Police Department. And there's some reason to believe that some of the factions within the police department have been involved with executions, constant with what happened in El Salvador, Guatemala, back in the 1980s. Death squads, in other words.
Yeah.
I know people like to pretend that that's far-reaching, far-fetching, and has no validity. But if you go back and examine, as we have done, and particularly during the 5 years that we were on the Police Community Relations Council and reporting back to the Department of Justice, we feel that we have sustained significant documentation and have identified police officers that have been involved in these kinds of executions and murders of African Americans as part of death squads here in this city, as well as their affiliation with groups such as neo-Nazis, the All-American Boys. In fact, I forgot to point out last week, and I promised it to a family, the young African American killed mysteriously up outside of Anoka, which is a city in Anoka County that's adjacent to Hennepin County, just north of the Twin Cities. Anoka is probably about 18 miles. A young African-American was found last year lynched on a golf course, the Greenhaven Golf Course, in just outside of Anoka. His last whereabouts had been identified at, regrettably for him, a very popular rebel bar, neo-Nazi bar, just outside of Anoka, and this young African-American came up dead, would have been beaten, tortured, and then hung on the golf course. So the All-American Boys, who we first reported on as a journalist about a decade ago, and then were joined by the then Steve Perry, editor of the City Pages back in those days, a very courageous journalist, we did a series of joint stories on the All-American Boys. These are young whites who basically have come out of the suburban schools, the so-called second-tier schools, Anoka, Chaplin, Rogers, Minnesota, Hanover, out towards that way, and are have sworn allegiance to Adolf Hitler and have sworn allegiance to the persecution of African Americans and others of color. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know that had happened. That was kind of kept hush up also.
Yes, it was. But if you check Anoka, this a year ago, Greenhaven Golf Course, you will see a very interesting story. It took them a year to pretend that they had gathered some facts which indicated. See, one of the things that happened is that what alerted authorities that something had happened is that they beat him out of his shoes. I mean, they actually beat him and drug him, and his shoes were found in the middle of the road. Ultimately about 3.5 miles from where his body was later found in the summer of 2009.
Not good at all.
That's right. So that's what we have here. Now, I understand as pertains to staying on the Civil Rights Department,
yeah,
our favorite anti-civil rights entity here, I understand a report has come out entitled "A Disparity Study" that kind of proves and reinforces what we here on Point have been saying, that conditions for African Americans and others of color to be involved in any number of types of programs, be they construction, economic enterprises, and et cetera, is a disaster for African Americans and others of color. And Velma Corvell, the director of the Civil Rights Department, has already began to move to do everything she could to suppress the document. It's a 300-page document, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, with a set of recommendations which have been withheld from the website that include a paragraph in there, Mr. Allen, that in fact talks in terms that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department has never conducted reviews and audits of the projects that they are involved with per the statutory authority that they have, which is quite an admission when you talk in terms of what we've been going through with Ms. Corvell in the Civil Rights Department and before that her successor, Michael Jordan, on the TCF Stadium, University of Minnesota, and the Twins Ballpark and the Children's Hospital at the University of Minnesota. Interesting report for those that have the time to go on the website and reprint a 300-page document. It is something else.
Yeah, and I'd just like to give a little bit out of that report because I went through that report. You know, I went through like half of it. I still have three-fourths of it to read, but it's just like if some of the points, the key points in there, it said from 2003 to 2007, firms owned by women and minorities just got 5.5% of the dollar value of city purchasing contracts. While they make up
5.5%.
5.5%. While they make up nearly 22% of the available pool. Now, if a minority firms were more likely to report that they did not apply for a loan over the preceding 3 years because they feared the loan would be denied. But when minority firms apply for a loan and loan requests were substantially more likely to be denied than non-minorities, even after counting for differences like firm size and credit history. And the third point here, when minority firms did receive the loan, they were obligated to pay higher interest rates on the loan than comparable to non-minority firms, okay? Now, this is not the first report. Well, this is the second disparity report in about 12 years, but back in, I think it's 2000.
Let me correct you.
All right.
The last report was really 1997, 13 years.
Oh, 13 years. Okay, that's even longer than I thought. But
yeah,
there was a report done regarding the investigative unit from the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute in a partnership with McAllister and a couple other academia type facilities. And they also gave a bunch of suggestions regarding the recommendations for compliance and enforcement. But still, to this day, you have companies like Veet who have been, quote unquote, caught 16, 17 times, and there has been no penalty at all. You know,
that's absolutely correct, and I would call our listeners' attention if they decide to go to the websites and check this report, this 300-page report. At page 10 of the so-called recommendations, which is a separate 17-page report, at page 10, is the analysis by the firm that was commissioned, only took them 5 years, to do this report and pay $500,000, forced the city of Minneapolis to confirm, based on the absence of documentation, that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department has not been monitoring any of these programs. They just take some numbers that are given to them by the white contractors and then certify those figures as being authentic.
Yes, exactly. That's that. It's called self-reporting, and that's illegal.
Yes.
And also, you know, I want to let our listeners know, this is still surrounding the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. You know, Mr. Edwards, I had a chance to drive downtown Minneapolis and park a car in front of the Schubert Theater in the parking lot across the street for almost the last 16 days. The last day was the 10th of November. So, but 16 days prior to that, I made a trip downtown early in the morning, take care of some business, and do some meetings. During this time, I did not see one African-American, Native American, Hispanic, Latino, or Asian on the construction site at the Schubert Theater in downtown Minneapolis. And it was very interesting because I got an opportunity to speak to one of the foremen that wouldn't go on camera, and I had promised him that I wouldn't write about it, but I told myself I might talk about it on the radio show. He says, you know what? He goes, I'm in business. Okay? This is a white gentleman.
Okay.
He says, if the city of Minneapolis is not going to enforce compliance, and I'm going to get the job done, my main duty is to get the job done. I says, if they were coming down here checking, and if they were so gung-ho about civil rights and compliance, they'd be down here every day looking. He says, but they're not, you know. And I guess they put in several requests for more income or upgrades to their original proposal. And, you know, anything over $50,000 has to have the small and underused business program goals there. And they're talking already that this thing is up past $32 million.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so go ahead.
And you and I both heard a broadcast a number of months ago, Mike Christensen, who is really the top spear carrier for obstruction as pertains to civil rights, was on Minnesota Public Radio, and he made a declaration that 60% of workforce and contracts in the Central were going to be going to protected class people than African Americans. You remember that? I think that would have been back in maybe late March of this year.
Yeah. Well, not only in that in late March, but, you know, Mr. Edwards, I was telling you not too long ago, actually a year ago, November 9th, 2009, I sat in a room with the National Association of Minority Contractors, who had their monthly meeting November 9th, 2009. And Mr. Christensen said, oh, I have it on video. It's on the Independent Business News Network. I have it on video where he's saying, yeah, we're 60% in compliance. We do great work and all this other great stuff. And it's just not the case. I mean, if you look at what the report says and what's coming out of these people's mouths, it's two separate things. And so I don't know if they've just finally convinced themselves that they're correct and the reports mean nothing, or they think there's a group of lower common denominators walking around that aren't going to say anything. So,
you know, it's an excellent point. Also, be advised that the sunsetting of the program, underutilization program, and et cetera, takes place 31st of March 2011. And the city is concerned that their political image was going to be such that as a part of closing out this program, which has been in place since, 1999, that there may be some exposure. I don't think that they expected the firm out of Austin, Texas. Well, that's their offices. Their prime office is New York City. I don't think that they expect them to reveal the fact that they, the firm, had determined that there was misinformation and fraud going on. The person, by the way, that was responsible for that happening is a consultant who was brought in, and in NEEK, as they call themselves. Her name is Colette Hoyt. She's an attorney, has a doctor's degree in jurisprudence, if you will. She has an office in, she operates out of Chicago. She's nationally and internationally known. She's the one that broke this open and discovered that Velma Corvell, Corky Taylor, and others, Johnny Burns and others, had been providing bogus documentation. Lynn Littlejohn of Mortenson, because they were, we had so much concentration of review on both stadiums. It was Colette Hoyt, Consultant Associates of Chicago, who broke this wide open and forced the introduction of the language at page 10 of the so-called recommendations. Now, by the way, to show you how this thing has been working, leaders in our city, the major so-called civil rights organizations, have already reached an agreement in principle. That in this town, that means they got an envelope, that they will not contest or raise any questions prior to the December 9th, 2010, meeting of the City Council, in which the City Council will embrace the report officially, will embrace the so-called recommendations, and quote-unquote move on without a thorough public discussion or examination. By the way, one of the other things in the report that Mr. Allen and myself were taken back by, though we have talked about it as activists and et cetera, is that the report confirms that African-Americans working on city projects in the city of Minneapolis receive about 38.7% less pay than Caucasians. 38.7%. The national average, by the way, is 32.5. In other words, here, Mr. Allen, Hispanics, Asians, et cetera, particularly even Hispanics who are illegal, receive better pay than African Americans, native-born blacks here in the city of Minneapolis. It's in the report. That in the initial report, it's at pages 117, 121, 127 of the document. I was stunned, and we've been talking about it ever since, you know, you and I became aware of the report back on the 21st of October when it was quietly brought in. I was waiting to be pleasantly surprised, I was not, that our leadership would in fact speak up on this issue, because the National Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., implied this in a hearing and testimony for the United States Congress on June 6th of 2010. Star Tribune and everybody else suppressed it. But again, I repeat, in the document, this disparity report, it confirms that African Americans, as you had pointed out earlier, Mr. Allen, with respect to contracts, insurance, and et cetera, African Americans are actually paid 38.7% less than Caucasians for same work, same qualifications, same everything on projects here in the city of Minneapolis.
Not a good thing, not a good thing. And we just don't have a functioning civil rights department here that will go out. I mean, I almost want to go as far as saying I don't think this would happen in Chicago or Atlanta, but definitely here in Minneapolis. And I just don't understand what, you know, what the enforcement branch is doing as far as, like, Mr. Johnny Burns, who is the contract compliance manager, and then Ms. Corbell, and before Ms. Corbell, Michael Jordan, who actually tore the department apart, tore it down to the point where his own investigative staff would get in front of the city council and talk really terrible about it. You know, and
yes. Wasn't that interesting? And then prior to him, Michael Kip Brown was interim director, and then prior to that, Jane Khalifa, though Jane Khalifa was the director who initiated and set aside initially $350,000 a little over 5 years ago, to do this disparity study. In fact, Dr. John Wainwright, one of the preeminent experts in diversity and disparity and all that, in his presentation Thursday before last, before the city council, as you and I talked about, he indicated that there needed to be some real concern about what was and was not happening within this city, and that there were some very troubling signs, and offered to continue to advise and consult. I guess the council basically figured we'd already paid $500,000. And there are some things that we certainly do not want to have discussed. But the key piece at this point, Mr. Allen, has been that in private consultations, the African-American leadership here, the Council of the Black Ecumenical Leadership Conference, and et cetera, Urban League, NAACP's, and et cetera, have all agreed that they will stand silent on this report. And the report will be embraced by the council on the 9th, on the morning of the 9th. It will be passed. And one of the programs that is being set up, and, boy, you're talking about a payday for pass-throughs and kickbacks, is there's a piece in there also, Mr. Allen, I think you've probably already come across, as I have, that talks about having a mentor and protege piece in which African-American firms will become proteges, if you will, and be mentored by the big white firms and then help them get the contracts. The only problem is that's what's been going on here for the last 20 years.
Exactly, and MnDOT has what they call the collaborative, and that mentor protege stuff. You know, a lot of people, Mr. Edwards, and I'm not getting off the point from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights in this report, but this report reflects what's going on just not at the city level, but also the state level. Those mentor protege programs do not work in the Twin Cities. These white contractors are not interested in working with these firms, but you have a secondhand. I actually was at a meeting with a director of Met Council, a director in one of the divisions there, who said that, you know, at some point, the African-American contractors don't understand how to perform the work on the particular jobs, and the white prime has to come back and do it for them. And I says, well, if the mentor protege program was working, that you would never have that issue.
Absolutely. And let me say on that particular point, in defense of some of our African Americans who are legitimate, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Boone, who had a company called Boone Construction and Boone Trucking, who brought a significant federal lawsuit against the city maps, the Civil Rights Department, about 9 years ago, proved that that was all a myth. So, you know, again, we have historical judicial references that say that's not true. But what the individual told you down there at the Schubert Theater, the white contractor, that is the philosophical argument that is being used. And you make an excellent point, sir, when you talk in terms of that these mentor programs and et cetera were really in existence and for real, then these things wouldn't be happening, that so-called white contractors have to go back and do the work. And allegedly that's the reason then that at some point or another the African Americans or persons of color must pay some kind of penalty to the white contractor.
Exactly. But, you know, I think that civil rights from every level in Minneapolis is getting ready to get shook up really well. The civil rights director for the U.S. Department of Transportation, which is one of the most powerful civil rights directors, second to the president of the United States, Kumail Hauser, H-A-Z-E-U-R, Hauser, will be in Minneapolis on December 4th. And yes, she will. And she's going to be a keynote speaker on December 4th for the Upper Midwest National Association of Minority Contractors annual dinner. And,
Is that at the Millennium Hotel?
That is the Millennium Hotel. And Mr. Edwards, I found out through the grapevine today, we will have lunch with her on the 3rd.
Oh, very good, very good. You have facilitated that. Very good, excellent.
Yes, yes. And it's an important thing to make this happen, because we have these fly-by-nights in civil rights that, you know, they've never ran a shoeshine shop before in their life. And they've never done a payroll. They don't know how to deal with people. I mean, we have a Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights downtown Minneapolis. They're not there for the civil rights of the people. If they actually did the work, RT would have shut them down a long time ago. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so it's ridiculous to see this level of incompetency from the only place that you got to face it. People that go into Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, like go to the Urban League, sometimes don't have any other resources but to go there. They've been discriminated against. Someone's done them wrong on a job, be it good, bad, or indifferent. You know, they always say there's two sides to every story, and then there's a right side, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yet
mm-hmm.
they should have the opportunity to have whatever they're talking about investigated in a fair and balanced way. Not information fed to the people they're investigating so they can have an opportunity to cover it up or change documents. And I mean, I have documents sitting here that just are absolutely ridiculous from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, that they actually fed information to a firm on a particular case, and this firm was able to come back and say some things to the left and to the right and just totally tear these individuals down. So that's not a working, functioning Department of Civil Rights at all.
Absolutely. And I want to leave another name when you talk in terms of information being passed back to a respondent. In other words, a respondent is the person that a complaint is being made against. There is a classic in which we have documentation here at the National Research Institute, an entity called Standard Sidewalk, who basically has the contracts for all sidewalk work done here in the city of Minneapolis. And Standard Sidewalk there's a letter that we've had for a couple of years in which Standard Sidewalk reminded then Director Michael Jordan that there had been an agreement in principle, an arrangement, clandestine in nature, a number of years ago, that Standard Sidewalk would not be burdened or bothered, quote unquote, by these civil rights programs, diversity programs, and et cetera. And Mr. Jordan had made the mistake of, actually he was forced into it under color law, to have received a couple of formal complaints against Standard Sidewalk. But a letter came from the head of Standard Sidewalk reminding him, you know, Negro, let you be reminded and understand that we have to react and are not, quote unquote, subject to your civil rights laws. Okay. Now, Standard Sidewalk does close to $1 billion worth of business here in the city of Minneapolis.
And want I or nothing, that's a shade darker than khaki.
That's right.
So,
That's absolutely correct.
I just decided, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, we're going to have to, like, well, I'm going to have to take it to another level when I'm talking about these people, because I listen to these other commentators on the right and on the left, and they really take it to these folks. You know, and I'm trying to be all considerate of people's feelings, but in this case, these people are just jerks. They're not doing what they need to do. They're collecting a city paycheck and going home. You know, that's it.
Well, I think this is one of the dangers for them with respect to the political phenomenon that took place here on November 2nd, where for the first time in probably, let's say, 38 years, I mean, that the Republicans have really knocked the Democrats out of the box with respect to control of both houses of the Minnesota legislature. And I'm hearing some interesting stories that the Republicans are saying, you know, as a part of an eye towards 2012 and continuing to embarrass the Democratic Party, and rightly so, the Republicans are going to start coming into a major Democratic enclave like Minneapolis and start raising some tough questions using our legislative power and authority. And I guess that, you know, in some respects, Mr. Allen, I guess that's a good thing.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. Being a card-carrying member of the Republican Party, I just think that it's about time that, you know, folks, especially in our community, saw the other side. Because what they see from the other side, you know, they might realize that all things at a dog and pony show are not true. And I'm not saying the Republicans don't have dog and pony shows, but I think that right now, as it stands with our economy and what's going on in the current DFL infrastructure in the Twin Cities, and especially in Minneapolis, we don't have an opportunity to create jobs, create business startups, because they have millions of dollars flowing into these nonprofits, to these people that get hired that have lettered degrees, and they don't hire Tony or Tyrone from around the corner off Broadway and Irving. They don't hire... Kathy from, you know, down the street on Thomas Avenue North.
Or Tanisha or Lanisha.
They take that money and they go to the comforts of St. Louis Park, Edina, Bloomington, Woodbury, Cottage Grove, Maple Grove, Upper Avenue in St. Paul, while the community is left to suffer. And another thing, I think that 2011, I understand, I've been reading that Ward 5 City Councilman Don Samuels, who kind of had we got to get into that interesting turn of events this week, but I hear he had a fundraiser. So if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Edwards, we have to try to track down a candidate that is going to be possibly someone that will take Don Samuels out of the fifth ward representation spot for 2000.
And take on other spear carriers for the Democratic Party who are not doing right by a constituency that is basically 92% each election loyal to them. You know, by the way, both you and I and our respective contacts have been listening to the whining and crying that's going on in Florida and South Carolina with respect to Mr. West and Mr. Scott, the two most recent African Americans who are now members of the Republican Party in the incoming Congress. And I'm hearing all this whining and et cetera, and, you know, folks are starting to get this feedback that a lot of black folk are saying, well, why should I continue to vote for a party that does nothing for me but certainly enjoys on a personal basis the riches of the vote that I continue to have and that I have, you know, unrestrictedly given to them since 1932. And if there was ever an enclave that represented, quote-unquote, we take everything from the black community and give them nothing in return, it's Minnesota and it's Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a strategic kind of task ahead for this Ward 5 because, you know, when it was in 2009, I want to say, yes, 2009, when we had mixed messages being sent by black media outlets, and we had a whole plethora of candidates that just didn't have the wherewithal. I think that for 2011, we're going to have to nail it down and start fundraising early for this one particular candidate. I'm not at liberty even to announce any names at this point, but I think, Mr. Edwards, that there's some gentlemen coming off the line that are ready for the challenge with the background and the academic qualifications needed to go in and make a dent. We just need someone that's too honest, you know, and that will look and see what's going on and won't be confused by the DFL infrastructure or the local poverty pimps, like in 2009. So
I think you're absolutely correct, and I think, again, so that when people start, you know, whining and crying and wailing at the wall, if you will, yeah, we have that in the black community too, wailing at the wall, that we use these instruments, such as the disparity report. This is not something that was put together by Don and Ron. Okay,
no.
This was put together by a prestigious white firm with world headquarters. Notice what we said, world headquarters in New York City. Their regional office in Austin, Texas, was contracted with 5 years ago, paid $500,000. They came with a report which arrived here on the 21st of October. A second piece arrived on the 22nd of October. A presentation of 12, 13, 14 days later was made as if it had just come in. And then Velma Corbell of the Civil Rights Department indicated that the document would not be available in massive distribution, that if you were an African-American and you really wanted to find out about it, if you didn't have a computer, you could make an appointment with the Civil Rights Department, and the Civil Rights Department only receives appointments on Tuesdays and Thursdays at best. You could make an appointment, you would have your appointment confirmed, and then you could come in and you would be led to a small room where on the table was the Great Bible called the Disparity Study, and there you could ask questions about it. Now, this is a 300-page document, sir, and that would satisfy the public's need to know and right to know. That means that this was Ms. Corbell's statement to the Minneapolis City Council 2 weeks ago this past Thursday. A week and a half ago this past Thursday. Again, I repeat it again. You know, like you said, it looks like there has to be an escalation. Leadership, I'd expected them to certainly make inquiry. I was in a meeting of the Native Americans this past Wednesday, if you will. The Native Americans are doing some things, and they had made inquiry about this. They raised a question to me in the course of that meeting, is that what was the intention of the African-American community? I told them I was not in the leadership forum, was not involved with that kind of high-ranking and important, quote-unquote, discipline, but that it would be a good question to ask them because my intel has indicated to me, as we said 20 minutes ago on this program, on point, that the deal has already been cut and that these quote-unquote leaders have already agreed for certain enumerations, if you will, to compensation, that they will make sure that they don't rock the boat on this, the disparity study. And there are many other kinds of similar issues that you and I know are in play. The North High School situation, the whole thing with the disaster of education, the sham that the school district pulled on the black community and others on this past Tuesday by saying that, well, if you want a new North High School, you, the community, which is in a situation of economic desperation, that you have to go out and recruit the kids. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
And if you recruit enough of them, and we decide not to change the rules of engagement, we may talk in terms of another school. Of course, this is all happening while Noble Charter School out of Chicago has arrived here in Minneapolis and have already been accorded two Pacific sites for a school North Minneapolis and a school South Minneapolis. And so
exactly.
I'm just trying to figure out what the future of public education is here in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Yeah, well, see, the community are not recruiters for schools. They never have been. This is something that needs to be done on a professional level via advertising, marketing, public relations. And, again, are they going to send the kids to Henry? Are they going to send them to North? Well, I mean, what's going to happen?
Absolutely. There won't be any North. The physical structure at North is being looked at by the University of Minnesota as a part of the Chiquetti Institute, I call him Dr. Frankenstein, to begin the mental health pieces that have been the obsession, really, of many in the white clinical community to begin to experiment on the African-American child. I'm talking about clinically experiment on them. And so that is going on, and so now they're talking about either City View or the old Lincoln High School or Lincoln Junior High there on Plymouth and 11.
And so there's all this discussion going on.
So I'm not sure what is going to happen. Why don't we give that number again, Mr. Allen, as we come up on 5 o'clock?
Yes. It's 1-877-572-4288. Again, we invite listeners to call in at 1-877-572-4288. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or a topic you'd like to talk about, definitely call in. Last week, Mr. Edwards, I call this being in the right place at the right time. I was at an institution in North Minneapolis, and they had recruited the City Inc. school students and paid them $50 a piece to talk about violence in the community.
You're saying this week?
Yeah, just this week. Yes. And
I thought the report had already been made.
Well, yeah, the report was already made, but the same Dr. Esther Jenkins, William Oliver, all those panelists that were at Shiloh like a couple Saturdays ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Polk,
happened to be, and gag corralling the kids in the back of this particular institution in North Minneapolis and saying that, you know, we want to talk about the violence. Now, I could not get into that particular room because I probably would have tore the top off, but I thought that was really unusual that they're going to do a backup piece and pimp the kids for $50 to get them to tell on what's going on. And I had some intel.
Well, let me ask the question here, because when you shared that with me, wasn't this supposed to be the gathering that was supposed to have taken place on the 25th of September 2010 that Bishop Howe and others were saying that they were going to ascertain this information about violence in the street, but they never had the gathering, and September 25th came and went and never happened. Oh, I see what they're doing. I have enough knowledge and understanding of research. Oh, they're going to backdate these interviews.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the plan.
I understand how corruption runs. They're going to backdate the interviews with these. How many was there, 10, 15, 20 students?
There's probably about 20 students, if not more, and some chaperones.
So they interview them, and then they backdate it and take the empirical data and put it in a report and make it appear that these were young people who were interviewed, let's say back on the 25th of September, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Which would be about a month before the meeting at Chattel International Ministries, where we received a report that had been done 4 years before.
Yes. You know, Shiloh International Ministries, Bishop Howe, Peace Foundation, NAS, all had become a kind of lame duck or a casualty of bad planning. And so they cannot firmly stand.
It's,
you know,
5 o'clock.
They can't firmly stand anywhere and say anything about any of the crime or the violence going on. But my concern, like I said, I had intel going in and out of there, and my concern are the questions about, you know, do you know XYZ going on your block? What house? Do you have an address? And I think that those kind of questions might put the youth in some danger, you know? And
yes,
so
yes, absolutely.
I didn't, like I said, I wasn't in there, but I had credible sources that were in and out of the room. And I felt very uncomfortable with this procedure by these group of people, and one not even being from the Twin Cities, from the University of Chicago, Doctor.
Actually, two, because Doctor, is it Williams's Oliver, is from University of Indiana, where he is involved with the Criminal Justice Studies Department there at the University of Indiana. So you had two outsiders, and then you had Pope and Williams, two University of Minnesota insiders. Oh, okay, but the key was that they were, I mean, come on, you know, I mean, to our listening audience, I mean, this was a, let's backdate some information and deal with the criticism that particularly has been coming from here on point. And by the way, Bishop Howe never got back to us with his promise to come on air and talk about the meeting a couple weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct. Bishop Howe does not want to challenge this platform. And there's very few out there that want to go head-to-head, you know, if they want to do that on this platform. Because, you know, we'll ask the real questions in an attempt to get the real answers. And a minute ago, Mr. Edwards, you were talking about the disparity report from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights done by NERA. And, you know, I've been in corporate America 30, 35 years. You know, I'm afraid to count back that far. But whenever there was a report done that was that size, so that the general public and maybe staffs of 6,000 or 1,000 or 200 could all see a copy of the report, a summary of the report was done in a nice booklet or a nice, you know, folder that would bring out some, even though this report, everything's just about bad, but it still would be condensed and summarized so that you could see the outline and the reflection. And I don't know, maybe the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights doesn't have anything buddy down there that knows how to do that. And they insist on, you know, making an appointment and coming down there and looking at the report if you don't have a computer or don't have access to it. This just doesn't add up. It doesn't make any sense. You know, why not make a summary report of that report from NERA?
Well, here's what our offices were told in a conversation with Elizabeth Glidden, Democrat 8th Ward here in this city. That question was posed, first of all, why a misrepresentation was made that Thursday morning to the city council about access to by community. And council member Elizabeth Glidden indicated that she was working on a town hall meeting to have a meaningful discussion and dialogue, though God knows that, you know, half the people that will show up, unfortunately, will not have computer capabilities and still will not have access to the report. I know that as an outgrowth of a conversation we had with her office, a report was rushed over to the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. But, of course, I and the news and the Research Institute, et cetera, we had already acquired our copies. Now, I say that because I'm encouraging those that are peeking in, you know, on the websites and et cetera, to give Elizabeth a call and find out time certain, because the council will receive the so-called final version and recommendations on the 9th of December, and it will be put into play, and there will be no further public commentary. So I'm encouraging those that are tuned in here just a couple weeks before Thanksgiving and about 3 weeks before the 9th, give Elizabeth Glidden, Democrat 8th Ward, Minneapolis City Council, a call and find out when that town hall meeting is going to be taking place and how what the format will be and how one will be able to access and at least be able to ask some questions. By the way, we would be remiss if we did not say this. I find it rather interesting, Mr. Allen, as I know you do, that we've heard nothing from the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission. Now, the Civil Rights Commission has equal authority and power under the ordinance here in the city of Minneapolis. And do you realize that, in fact, I don't think I saw any members of the Civil Rights Commission, which basically now is almost all white. I didn't see any members of the commission. But the commission is, in fact, charged by law to have public hearings on research documents and et cetera. Have you seen anything on the computer network that says that the Civil Rights Commission has announced a meeting time certain?
You know, I haven't seen anything. Anyway, I'm actually on the City of Minneapolis website right now under the city, the Civil Rights Commission, and I don't see any plans for anything. Nothing going. Let me see here. Filing in civil rights announcement. Let's go to announcements. Martin Luther King essay contest expires on 12/3. That's it. And
That's the civil rights Martin Luther King Jr. essay that the majority of the commissioners about a month and a half ago, we reported on that here on Point about 7 weeks ago, told the former African-American vice chair who has carried this thing for 5 or 6 years that they weren't really interested in the essay program, that they thought it was a waste of time with the good white folks. I mean, really, that's what they said to Mr. Brown. Not to be confused with Michael Kip Brown, Deputy Director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. Again, for our listening audience, I know there are some people that sit there with almost in a state of shock, not wanting to believe that we are like we are up here in these enclaves. But what we're laying out to you, my friends, our listening audience, we're just laying out to you the facts.
Yeah, you know, and I don't even think I've seen Sonia Peterson, the chairman of the commission up there on that particular day when Ms. Corbell laid out the plan with the gentleman from NERA. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what she's doing.
I have, you know, no idea. I didn't even know that Sonia was now the chairperson of the commission. She's a attorney here in Twin Cities who postures herself as a strong advocate for the rights of the Negro, if you will. Of course, we all know that's not true. But I would reinforce that. I would challenge some of the listeners who are tuned in from out of the metropolitan area to call and ask and email the commission and ask them what knowledge do they have of this disparity report, particularly when you have a report that now confirms that city-funded projects under color of law have in fact been involved for years in both encouraging on one hand and overlooking on the other payment to African-American workers that is almost half less than what is paid to a Caucasian, 38.7%. In other words, a black man out there trying to, or a black woman trying to support their family, et cetera, in our city here, under the billions and billions and billions of dollars of public works and et cetera, are automatically paid 38.7% less for the same work with the same qualifications. I mean, you talk about plantation and slave mentality. Well, we do it. Look, Don, I've always said to you, my friend, we do it better here than Bilbo could have done it.
Yeah.
Or Strom Thurmond.
Exactly. And then, you know, Ms. Evans, I'm still sitting here on the site, another studio. It says the commission shall, okay, one of the things they're supposed to do, especially number 5 and number 7. Number 5 is cooperate and seek to advise and coordinate the activities of persons of groups interested in the objectives of this title, which is the procedures and powers and duties of the commission. And number 7. Conduct public meetings and hearings and gather and disseminate information to government agencies and to the public. So out of the 10 things here, there's more than 2 that they're not doing. And they have not made any plans to conduct a public meeting or hearing or to gather some information. And so, I mean.
And let me just say, Mr. Allen, appreciate you going into the high tech because that was charter and statutory requirements that I was a part of writing over 40 years ago. And you know how bad that makes me feel, and that's the reason that I raised the question about where is the Civil Rights Commission as it pertains to this crisis, because I, 40 years ago, was involved with a very dedicated group of African-Americans and others. We were Negroes back in those days, who worked very hard, gave their sweat, blood, their heart, and their passion to trying to make a difference here. And I've seen it. The forces of obstruction and nullification have just ripped apart civil rights here in the city of Minneapolis and in the state of Minnesota.
Exactly. It's unacceptable. This whole everything that they're doing, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, the commission, the mayor's office, the Minneapolis police, it all points to ethics. I mean, there's a lot of ethics. I remember, and I think it was October, I'm going to go down to the hearing, the ethics hearing. But they had canceled it last minute, and I'm actually looking for this now, the Ethical Practices Board. And I'm just going to see here. Let me see when their next meeting is here. Meeting schedule, let's see if they canceled that. It's usually the third Tuesday of the month in room 321 at 3 p.m.
That's right. In fact, our city attorney, Susan Siegel, is supposed to be the caretaker of that particular statutory requirement, if you will. In fact, she is required by the charter, the Minneapolis City Charter, which governs the operational direction of this city. She's supposed to make an annual report. In fact, it's probably due this month, no later than mid-December before Christmas, with respect to any ethical problems that has been discovered by the city attorney's office or has been discovered as a part of a companion effort by any other department of the city of Minneapolis. Example, Civil Rights Department having now been confronted with the fact that in the billions of dollars that have been allocated by the city to projects in which human beings, quote-unquote, are directly employed or receive contracts, that African-Americans specifically have been singled out for compensation almost half less than their white counterparts. That is an ethical it should be a significant ethical concern. It is an ethical catastrophe, Mr. Allen, all right? Yet you will see, I will bet you a nice steak dinner, that we will not see any report by or before 31 December 2010 from Susan Siegel, the city attorney for the city of Minneapolis, or any questions raised by Mayor R.T. Rybak relevant to is this, okay? But again, if it had not been for Colette Hoyt, the attorney out of Chicago, Hoyt and Associates, who worked with NERD on this 5-year, quote-unquote, study. If it had not been her insisting that information be incorporated into the document, we would basically, yourself, myself, and a very a small group would be under attack as providing inconsistent and inaccurate and pointless information. By the way, how are things coming with the $16 million that has quietly come into the city of Minneapolis, parceled out between half in St. Paul, half in Minneapolis? Have there been any job fairs? How many jobs will our people be getting in the building of the light rail transit corridor before to break off?
You know what they're going to do, Ms. Edwards? They're going to do the same thing they do with that $16 million is what they're going to do with the money, the stimulus money they got, and for the foreclosure money they received. They're going to hire some people, talk about it, and no jobs other than their friends and buddies are going to be able to get access to those dollars, you know? I mean,
okay.
You got to talk about between, 2008 and 2010, about $100 million coming into the city of Minneapolis for the foreclosure. What do they do?
Yes, sir.
Fancy brochures. They talk about foreclosures. They have these little forums here and there. They finance these nonprofits while the homeowners are steadily losing their homes. Okay, they hire their buddies, they hire people that work for subprime lending organizations to talk to minority ethnic folks about losing their home. And nothing. Versus having the money go directly to the homeowner to catch up so he doesn't lose his house. So this $16 million, this 8-8 split or however they're going to do it, this is another bunch of money that, you know, they pride themselves on being, you know, transparent like the Obama administration. But when it comes down to it, there's snakes in the grass.
Well, absolutely. There we are again. I mean, we all, in the course of this program, in mid-November, we've already been talking about probably in excess of $6.5 billion in revenue stimulus and et cetera that has, and we go back to Dr. Wainwright's presentation before the Minneapolis City Council, where he actually wound up saying that really what has happened is less than one half of 1% of Negroes in the Twin Cities are involved with receiving a single penny from these, and excuse the expression, these entitlement programs.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I watched the council that Thursday morning when Dr. Wainwright made that statement and gave that particular figure, and I found it amusing. Though Steve Brandt of the Star Tribune did use the 5.5 figure against 22% of those that are involved that are certified and et cetera, would be eligible, but only about 5.5 are even considered. But Dr. Wainwright pointed out that the bottom line, the dollar line, was one half of 1% of the, and I think at one point the figure was something like $36 billion. So, and then people run around here trying to ask the question here in the Twin Cities, why is there such poverty and despair in the communities of color? At least the Native Americans have still in place their MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, which they put in place about 15 years ago. And they have threatened, by the way, something else Star Tribune hasn't been reporting on, the Native Americans have been threatening to go into federal court, stopping every federal penny that's coming into Minneapolis based on a violation of the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding. And this was a part of the meeting that took place just a couple of days ago at the American Indian Center in South Minneapolis. Someone, as I said earlier in this program, asked me the question, how say the Negro on this particular proposition? And I said basically what happened. The Negro leadership had received their envelopes and that there would be no quote-unquote challenge to these continued violations and this decimation, really, the decimating of the future of the sons and daughters of the African in this city.
Yep, agreed, 100%. I mean, I just don't know what direction we're going to have to possibly take it because, you know, it's snowing outside, so everything really goes get slow. And these people, they're just not going to adhere to any, you know, it's going to be harder to get them out to participate in anything. So we got to keep close tabs. We're right under 12 minutes here, Mr. Edwards, and I just want to let people know that again, on the December 4th, there's two events going on real quick here. They're going to have the Miss Black Minnesota USA pageant at Ted Mann Concert Hall. Starts at 6 p.m. with Kenny Lattimore playing. And that's for one segment of the population. And for the other, for the contractors and the business people, there is the National Association of Minority Contractors annual gala at the Millennium Hotel.
In downtown Minneapolis. Just so for transparency, the Ted Mann Concert Facility is on the campus of the University of Minnesota. We didn't say that.
Yes, it is. And the event with the National Association of Minority Contractors, they're going to have Miss Camille Hauser as the keynote speaker, and she is the second most powerful woman, or actually the most powerful woman in civil rights in the United States. She is with the U.S. Department of Transportation.
And okay.
She's going to be here addressing some things that are going on. And I know the people at MnDOT, Met Council, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights are pretty much shaking in their boots right now because I've seen some video of her and she doesn't tolerate too much mess, Mr. Edwards. And
okay.
And so this should be very interesting to find out, you know, her opinions and her views and what steps to take to either, again, shut down the money for MnDOT here and some of the non-compliance agencies, or how do we make this work? We have a caller.
Oh, let's get him in. Let's get him in.
Yes, Maz is calling. Your name, sir, or ma'am. Hello?
Yeah, that's Bob. Yeah, Bob.
Hey, Bob, what's happening?
Yeah, nothing much here. What's going on with this North High School thing here, you know? And offers put on the table. We're going to keep it open. The community needs 125 kids. Where are they going to get the kids from?
Bob, we asked that question of some of the organizers, and they really don't have a clue. For our national international audiences, be advised the question that this caller is asking, where will even the 125 students be found to keep the number at 500 in the so-called New North High? There are no feeder schools in North Minneapolis, so you don't have any schools that will feed in to the 8th and 9th grade classes at North. So to your question, sir, I have not a clue. I have not an idea.
People raised hell about the school closing. Now you're telling me they can't get 125 kids recruited to come there from the suburbs?
Well, let me just say this, sir, and the record speaks to that. They weren't able this past year to get 60. Because you're hearing now is that prior to some of them being taken on a trip to Fantasyland down in Chicago to sign off on the Noble Academy, they were saying that they could get 60 kids, which at that point, or 60 children, 60 students, which would have kept North open and delayed the announcement by the superintendent of the closing of the institution by 2014. That was just 60. Now, that number has been 51% escalated, doubled, in other words. If you can't get 60, and by the way, the current class at North, these are the official numbers given to Mr. Allen and myself, is that it's down to about 41 to 39, depending on who made the count. So I don't know, sir. I don't know how they're going to get 125.
Yeah, well, you have your, great education champion in William English and Randolph Stanton. I mean, it should have been an emergency press conference recruiting kids already for, next year.
Well, it's going to be difficult for them to do that because they're tied up right now in working for Mortensen and carrying a little water for Mortensen to make it appear that there will be diversity on the district's beautiful new, I call it the Crystal Palace, $37.5 million headquarters in the midst of all this poverty. Some of the gentlemen that you named are already under contract.
Oh, really?
Mr. Allen and I have been kind of constrained, wanting to see if other people were even concerned. Those gentlemen that you just mentioned, they're under contract to Mortensen as it pertains to the monitoring, if you will, or lack of. So to your question about them, I don't know, because I do understand that, is it Mr. English? Mr. Allen was shepherding the students at the UROC facility the other day in the backdated...
Yes, he was.
He was on some
shady, grimy download stuff. And I was just really sad to see because the City Inc. was one of the schools that didn't report test scores at the end of the year.
We'll talk about that here, caller. Just so we're clear in this transparency, we reported that here back in September that we were concerned that City Inc., as well as the Urban League, didn't report test scores, and we were kind of trying to understand what that meant for headmasters or principals, whatever, how they identified themselves, who were saying that they were the shepherds, the good shepherds, if you will, of education on behalf of the African American. And I'm not quite sure what that means. And then I certainly wanted to remind Mr. Allen, my associate and co-host here, that Mr. English, is it Dr. English, or does he have a doctor's degree now? Or what?
Is it Reverend, Doctor, Mr.? I don't know.
Okay. I don't know if Billy Bob is on. Billy Bob's kind of a clever person. He makes those calls. He listens to us out of southern Tennessee, kind of answers some tough questions. Well, we hope we answered it. We look like we're coming down to how many? What do we have, Mr. Allen?
We have 6 full minutes.
Okay. Is Billy Bob still with us, or what?
Yes, he is. Billy Bob.
Billy Bob, any other questions?
He must have hung up.
Yep. He sounds like he's gone. Good question, though, by the caller out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. We're aware. how he's kind of operating. Good question, though. I hope that someone can come up with the answer. Superintendent Johnson said here on, was it Tuesday, Mr. Allen? Because I know that your news organization called that and covered that so-called press conference. She indicated that after they close North down, they're going to work on a new North, but they don't have a physical location. Is that right?
Yeah, they were going to figure out kind of, you know, redesign it, close the old North High down and redesign a new North, a better North, a learning North. And I thought that was very interesting. You know, they had the usual suspects in it. So it was very interesting. So
I understand she said the cap number was no more than 500 students.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Well, that's exactly the same number that they've cited for the new Noble Academy that will be coming into our city in September of next year.
Yep, exactly. And we're gonna.
Is that kind of a coincidence or what?
I think that might be a huge coincidence. You know, just kind of a train wreck there. But you know, we're gonna have to see how this all plays out because I mean, I haven't seen the public school system here do any type of top of mind. Gathering, you know, besides the fact they don't have a feeder school, you know, which is the biggest thing right there. They've done nothing to even attract children that live in the neighborhood within what someone told me they estimated 1,500, 2,000 kids within a.
They have 65 or 70 kids right across the street physically from North High School, but unfortunately, they are not in the North enrollment zone. They're in an enrollment zone of a school called Patrick Henry, which is 50 blocks north of North High School. I'm talking about these kids walk out their front door, walk across the street, and they're at North High School, but they cannot enroll at North, even though we allegedly have open enrollment here in Minnesota. But North cannot be their first choice.
No, it can't.
That's how we operate up here.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all. So, again, you know, we have a another, but also I'd like to let people know if you're interested in going to the Ethical Practices Board meeting, it is next Tuesday, the 16th of November, in room 321 for the city of Minneapolis at 3 p.m. So I did.
All right.
I happen to track that down. And if you have a complaint, there is an online complaint form. There are conflict of interest forms. There are. Everything I was looking for is right here. I might have to fill out one each. So, I did find them. Remember, next Tuesday, 3 p.m., the city of Minneapolis, Ethical Practices Board meets. That's
okay, there it is right there. Opportunity for our leaders, as Billy Bob raised a question to us. Chance for our leaders to really go down and, as they say at Gates Barbecue in Kansas City, Missouri, to strut their stuff.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we're right under 2 minutes, Mr. Edwards, and in closing.
All right, I will begin to wrap it on this end then.
Okay. We just want to say, hey, thanks for listening. If you want to say anything, Mr. Edwards, throw something in there for closing, or?
No. We're just kind of watching everything that goes on. Oh, by the way, we want to indicate again our condolences to the family of the legendary Reverend Major Topps, who was laid to rest here in our city. After succumbing to injuries suffered during the course of a beating inside the North Minneapolis Church on the 24th of October, 2010. So yes. Major Topps was interned. Lovely services, standing room only at the church in North Minneapolis in which the services were held. But the Reverend Major Topps, longtime inspirational and youth leader in this city, beaten to death, if you will, laid to rest. Okay, hey, looks like we're getting ready to try to wrap it up, Mr. Allen. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate our listening audience, national and international, tuning in and sharing this information with us and us with them.
Yeah, and I'd just like to let our listeners know, if you're in Minneapolis, tune in to Minneapolis Television Network. Tomorrow is Channel 17 at 5 p.m. for Black Focus with Mr. Ron Edwards. And don't forget to read the Independent Business News Network at IBNNnews.com. And then Mr. Edwards' blog is the MinneapolisStory.com, all one word. We'll be back next Saturday at 4 p.m. And with probably a lot more stuff. And we appreciate the 155 listeners locally here in Minneapolis that tuned in during this hour and a half. And we look forward to having you back again next week. And maybe you might want to call in. Again, you've been listening to On Point. My name is Don, along with my co-host, Mr. Ron Edwards. Thank you. You've been listening to On Point.